Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up? Welcome into another edition of What's Up Belly Up. I got myself and my co-host Zach Mack here with us. We started off with two episodes on football, and you know what? Let's keep the train rolling. We'll pick up kind of where we left off week to week. Couple different topics, probably shoot through these quick. So I mean, really, I'll just jump right into it. No real script or anything to really follow outside of, we'll just start specifically with Minnie, your boy, the old quarterback there, you know, laying the egg. I guess it was a little different competition. I mean, you know, I guess the Saints, it all depends, but all the analysts were pretty much on Minnesota. Pretty much San Francisco did exactly what they needed to do. Take Dalvin Cook out of the game. That's what happened. And the end result is San Francisco ran away with it. Your take from that game, obviously we're going to talk a lot of games, but specifically this game, Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the network analyst. That surprised me, honestly, because they were picking teams before the games. And I thought at worst it was going to be split. Like maybe some of them would say Minnesota because – the Niners take a week off and everyone seems to forget what they're capable of. But like it was an enormous amount of them were picking Minnesota. And I was just like, this has got just Kirk Cousins fumbling this game away written all over it. Cause now everyone's putting the Vikings as a winner and Kirk Cousins gets lucky and he plays the first game of the weekend again. So he's not technically in prime time, but everyone's picking him. And what does he do? He lays an egg. We literally talked about it last week. If they shut down Dalvin Cook, we could pretty much be confident the Niners were going to do because the Niners defense is the Niners defense.
Yeah. Four first round picks on that line.
Yeah. And then it's on Kirk Cousins' shoulders and he's not going to be able to win a playoff game when the game rests on his shoulders. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
So, like I said, we'll quickly move from topic to topic. Don't have a lot to say on that other than shit, your game plan. That's pretty basic going into that game, what you have to do. Make Kirk Cousins beat you. He didn't. So, you know, I guess on to the other side of the NFC, which actually it's kind of funny looking at it. If Minnie would have won and then Green Bay on the other side, you would have had mini Green Bay NFC Championship, which is kind of crazy based off of that division, you know.
Yeah.
We hold near and dear to our heart. But you know, we go to Green Bay. The score, I don't think, really tells the whole tale of the game. Many will say, depending on what side you're standing on, but Green Bay might have been gifted a first down. That spot on that play, you've seen so many different videos, different still frames, and almost like I've seen different like chalk outlines of the body and how, you know, the line is nowhere near straight. So your take on that, was that the straw that kind of broke the back of who is it? Seattle? Yeah, I'm sorry. And you know, was, I mean, is that really the momentum that took Green Bay to the next step, essentially going to the next round here?
I mean, yeah, it was almost like, so that's the, I think it was like the clinching first down or whatever, and they were able to run the clock out or something. I'm so clouded from last night's game, which I know we're going to get to, but the the ref runs out and he gives the most favorable. So, and I just threw my hands up and I was like, yep, they're not going to overturn it. I mean, he was clearly not on, he didn't have a first down. In live motion, I was like, he doesn't have a first down. But they give him the spot. And it's just, the Packers get favored by the refs. And I know it's because, you know, we're Lions fans and I just dog on the Packers as much as I can. But it's frustrating. But at the end of the day, I thought that the Packers were the better team in that game.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, everybody's going to say you never want to be in a situation where one play is going to beat you. And I don't think it necessarily that's the play that beat them. But like you said, that was the play that pretty much iced the clock, that iced the game, you know, because in all reality, like you said, Green Bay outplayed Seattle. But Seattle, I guess I shouldn't say Seattle, Russell Wilson essentially – took that team on his back that game, which I think he's kind of done all season long. We talked about maybe Beast Mode coming out, and you know, I don't know. I know Beast Mode was out, I don't know how many months, you know, so he's not back in the flow of things, but in you know, you got another backup as far as Turbine. Not much of a running game, but you think you got these two backs you can pound. So I think Russell Wilson really made it. It's not going to happen. I think he had a case for MVP, made a case right there even more. Not going to happen. But to me, I was more impressed with Russell Wilson, the way that he's been really overshadowed a lot this year. Essentially took that team on his back with nothing. I mean, DK Metcalf's kind of coming around. Tyler Lockett started off hot. But really on that team, there's nobody. I mean, you got Clowney making plays here and there. I just feel like Russell Wilson's the bright spot on that team that really – really carried them to that game and through that game, I guess.
Yeah, I'll admit we made a prediction, a bold prediction, that we'd get a Beast Mode on in that game, and we didn't. I mean, he got 12 carries, 26 yards. He did have two scores, but we didn't get the Beast Mode on we were expecting. And you're exactly right. It seemed like in the second half, I mean, they go into the second half down 21-3, the Seahawks do, and it seems like Russell Wilson's scrambling on every play. Like, I said this to myself, and I realized that the Seahawks are very banged up, but it's like nobody could run a route on that team. Nobody could get open. Nobody could create space. Russell Wilson's – and maybe the pass rush was too much for the Seahawks line to handle, but he's just scrambling, trying to make a play out of nothing. It seemed like every single play, and they made the game close. Like, that, it's just a huge testament, I think, like what you're saying. He's overshadowed by the hype from Lamar Jackson, the season he had, which is a great season. I'm not taking anything away from Lamar Jackson, but – man, it just seemed like it was the Seattle Russell Wilsons out there.
Yeah, it was definitely something. And I had my pick was Seattle. I knew that was out on a limb. I thought they could get done. Honestly, to tell you the truth, this entire season, and you know, you can't fault where they're at now or say much, but I was not impressed by Green Bay this entire season. They didn't have the Green Bay season that they usually have. I know, again, Davante Adams was out for a while. You know, they were banged up as well. They've made a run. I think they got hot at the right time. Rodgers is doing Rodger things, but I'm very surprised at this. You know, now seeing the next round matchup, you know, what's going to happen here. It'll definitely be interesting. I don't think Green Bay, and I know I said this last week, but I don't think Green Bay has a shot, especially with the way San Francisco's defense is playing. But who knows? I mean, either way, it'll definitely be an interesting game. I still think the champions are going to come out of the AFC. But again, you know, we talked last week how the one game nobody really cared about because they thought it would have been a blowout, essentially ended up being the game that could have been a toss-up this past week. The way it worked out, you know, I assume you're talking about when you shot me over some notes, you're talking KC. I could be wrong, but with that game and how it started being down, 28 points or 24 points in the first quarter and coming around, you know, there's a lot to be said about Kansas City, you know, just in general, that game, as well as, you know, you can look at, I saw so much about who's a better tight end, Kelce or Kittle, you know, and Kelce in this game, Patrick Mahomes, you know, both these guys are just playing out of their gourds. But, you know, really between these guys, like, you got two probably what your QB1 and your tight end one essentially on the same team. You know, you got your speedsters. It just goes to show, you know, Tyreek Hill, kind of like DeSean Jackson. I mean, granted, recently, he's been more productive, obviously. But that same body mold, that those guys that can fly, takes one hit and they kind of are banged up. But was this the game that you thought maybe most people weren't really going to worry too much about, because in all reality, it should have probably been a blown out, but probably more so the most interesting game?
Yeah, I thought that the Seahawks-Packers game could have been a toss-up, and that ended up being, you know, like we just talked about, the Packers blew them out in the first half, and that's kind of – that was the fat lady singing at halftime. But, yeah, this Kansas City, you brought up Mahomes and Kelce, and Mahomes is a great quarterback, and the more he wins, the more playoff experience he gets under his belt. But Travis Kelce, especially when they're staging that comeback in the second quarter – and I get Mahomes can, like, he can roll out of the pocket, he can make plays, but it seemed like he was always finding Travis Kelce. Like, and I think Kelce set a record for the most, like, touchdown receptions in a quarter. And it just seems like I start to wonder, you know, if Travis Kelce isn't part of those weapons on offense, maybe Mahomes isn't completing as many passes as he is outside the pocket. So that's why I brought up the question, you know, who's a bigger playmaker in that comeback, Kelce or Mahomes? And I think there's an argument to be had there. It could be one or the other.
Yeah, I just think it's funny because it totally came in full circle. It seemed like the first half, I know we keep talking about Philly and stuff like that, but the first quarter was like watching the Philadelphia Eagles wide receivers try to catch the ball. Every single one of the receivers, Kelce included, were making big drops, key drops on first or third downs to essentially extend the sticks to first down. And then to see that that turn of events and them just to take charge, you know, this isn't like a top tier defense. They do have some talent, but you know, in past Kansas City has had a really, really solid defense. Obviously they're coming around with an explosive offense. And the best part about this is, you know, I don't even think at Belly Up we made a whole big deal about this, but the sheer fact that Kansas City straight up said on their scoreboard, "Hey, sorry, we scored too many points. We don't even have any more fireworks." You know, that's saying something after being down buried pretty much in the first quarter. So, I mean, to me, that was a great game. Looking forward to this upcoming week. I think the Titans are opening people's eyes. I think there's a lot of people jumping on that bandwagon, riding that as far as they can. This obviously will be a big test for them. Not that the other ones haven't been, but Tannehill, I don't think anybody can get over Tannehill right now. What he's doing, he's not even game managing. He's going out there, and granted, Derrick Henry is the workhorse, and it opens up a lot of things. But Tannehill is not afraid to do anything right now. He is literally, as our boy Carter says, chucking the pill all over the field and making plays. And again, Derrick Henry pounding the ball. He was what, 2 yards short of 200 yards again. You know, like, it is unbelievable what they're doing. Do you see these guys, Tannehill, Henry, really surprising some people? I guess they probably already surprised people, but to take this essentially away from Kansas City and make a run to the Super Bowl?
It's hard to bet against them at this point, but and honestly, it's all coming from Vrabel. I think the head coach, the relationship between Vrabel and Tannehill is tangible, I think. And I don't know if it's more of Tannehill and the OC. And I don't know, you know, what goes into as far as play calling, play by play versus a script at the beginning of the game. But I mean, we all saw the toss that Tannehill made. It was like a 7-step drop or whatever it was. He might have dropped back 20 yards. I don't know. But then he just slings it. And it's like – and as soon as he threw it, I'm like, oh, that's over. That's going through the goalpost. Like, where's he throwing that? Drops perfectly in the breadbasket, over-the-shoulder catch, touchdown. And it was just a perfect script by Vrabel because he just was letting Tannehill air it out at the beginning. And you talked about Tannehill. He's making plays. He's not putting up big numbers, but he's making key plays when he needs to. And all Vrabel did was let Tannehill air it out at the beginning. And then rode his workhorse towards the back end of the game. Henry was getting 1-2 yards maybe stuffed at the line of scrimmage at the beginning of the game. But it didn't really matter because Vrabel was airing the ball out. He was stretching the defense, and then he just pounded his running back in the second half. And it just worked to perfection. I don't think – I mean, they shocked everyone by beating New England. But then they go in and they beat Baltimore, who's been the hottest team in the NFL the second half of the season, if not the whole season. And I just think the game plan by Vrabel was absolute genius.
Yeah, I'm obviously I've said it. I've talked about it. We talked about it last week. You know, a coach we would like to see win. I think it'd be great to see Vrabel win. And you know, you may have a little hot take on Vrabel. I think you're kind of you're drinking my Kool-Aid. So what are you thinking as far as Vrabel and his coaching future?
Yeah, so I was criticized as being a prisoner in the moment, but during that game, I said Vrabel is going to win a minimum of 3 Super Bowls as a head coach. I think the way he's able, like, it's not easy to bench a first round pick. Mariota, was he first overall or was he second overall? So I don't know.
I don't even remember, but yeah,
it's not easy to bench
especially
that guy
for somebody who Tannehill has had flashes, but he did nothing. But then you see pretty much everybody that left Miami this year is now either a Pro Bowl or like a stud on their team, no matter, like, between Kenyon Drake, Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know, I mean, literally all these guys are somewhere else playing to the level of essentially where they are picked or above that. So it just shows kind of what you're saying, you know, what coaching can do, what a new system can do, because obviously, Tannehill went there. He was the backup. He wasn't the starter. Vrabel rolled the dice, said, let's run with this. Let him air out the ball, like you said, build some confidence, and they've just been riding it ever since. Again, they've got Derrick Henry, which is, pretty much, I mean, the easiest thing you can have, a workhorse like that you can just pound the ball and almost guarantee 4 or 5 yards a carry, you know, to bail you out. But like you said, Tannehill is not made to manage the game. He's out there making plays with an unproven wide receiving core because they're all young. I don't think Corey Davis has really lived up to his hype yet. AJ Brown had a great year. It seems like every time I get into fantasy, I say, oh, Delanie Walker's still available. I'm going to pick him up. He's going to get me some points. Past 2 years, he's been on IR. So they've really had a lot of opportunity, a lot of talent. It really hasn't evolved to anything until all of a sudden this year, where Vrabel comes in, puts the trust in these players, and now look what they're doing. So great topic there. Zach Mack got Vrabel down for 3 Super Bowls. So if you need to at Belly Up Zach Mack, you can look him up, let him know about it. But I think we will keep it at that as far as NFL. Obviously, last night was the national championship game. We had LSU, we had Clemson. Alabama wasn't there. And you saw obviously what happened.
Nick Saban was there though.
Oh yeah, and he was not happy. Just me and him to watch it. But quickly though, is this and I don't even say antics, because Joe Burrow is not a flashy person. He's soft spoken, he's not a jerk. Is this like the rebirth of maybe not a Broadway Joe, but the next coming of, I mean, probably there's no way Joe Burrow is one and done as far as, okay, now he's going to be the first round pick, go to the NFL and be a bust. I mean, is this like the hype following him? Is this real? Especially for, well, you're saying that the Bengals won't take him. You still sticking true to that?
I don't know. Now I'm like, I mean, he showed out and I was surprised, honestly, and I'm flipping over because obviously I watched that game. I saw the performance that Joe Burrow put in. I mean, Trevor Lawrence had won, dating back to high school, had won 66 straight games as a starting quarterback. It was like 41 in high school, 25 in college. Was not impressed by Trevor Lawrence at all in that game. And am I going to slay him for one game? No. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is going to be back next year. We'll see what he can do. Hopefully this doesn't kill his confidence, but You're right. I'm all on the Joe Burrow train now. Now I'm like, I wouldn't be mad at all if the Bengals took him. I think
it took 1 week, folks. It took 1 week, folks.
I mean, this is a big stage for Joe Burrow, and I thought it was the best defense that he saw. He didn't crack under pressure. I mean, he could have been very well frustrated at the beginning of the game. They start like two drives inside their own 10, and it looks like, you know, Clemson's going to manage the hell out of this game. But he breaks out, makes big plays. I think he threw for what, like 5 or 6 touchdowns. I don't have stats in front of me, but I mean, to do that on a Clemson defense, I just thought it was extremely impressive. I'm behind this kid now. I think he's going to be great.
And obviously, you talk about Trevor Lawrence, and honestly, to tell you the truth, last year and kind of, you know, even the year before, once Trevor Lawrence first came in, you know, he was a hot commodity. He was the bee's knees, as the old men say. I think quickly that is come and gone. Like you said, Lawrence will be back again. I'm sure he'll have another great season. But translating to the NFL, it's very hard to gauge these guys, especially a mobile running white quarterback, you know, and to translate to the NFL, very rarely do you see these guys. I mean, he's got an arm, but very rarely do you see these guys translate and really work out. Honestly, I think he's kind of a comparison of Mariota. Mariota ran a little more. I think Trevor Lawrence has a better arm. People can tell me I'm wrong all I want. That's fine. But obviously, in one year's snapshot based off of Trevor Lawrence's entire career so far, I would put money on Burrow's any day of the week. It's hard for me to say, being an Ohio State Buckeye, but on the flip side, Ohio State in college, they always have good quarterbacks. So it was actually a great opportunity for him. Can't fault the kid one bit. Look, you know, he goes out and nothing better than listen to Coach O talk about his fried bologna or whatever he was talking about. Nobody understood. It's just sad that that's going to go away for the next how many months until next year. So,
yeah.
So between the two, and we're talking about a quick snapshot, but Joey B going to the NFL, could he be, I know we talk about first round picks, especially first overall, you know, Stafford, all that stuff. You know, Stafford came in and we always make some kind of Lions reference here and there. His start to this career was shaky. The same thing with Burroughs. He could go to the Bengals, which, it could be almost worse than the Stafford situation because they may not have any wide receivers. But could Burroughs really go into the NFL right now and really like translate to 4, 5, 6 wins by himself?
I think he could. And that's why I put, I sent you a note that I think Joe Burrow is better than Trevor Lawrence at this point. And it's because, I mean, you mentioned Lawrence is kind of a running quarterback. He's 6'6", 220. I mean, of course, the guy's not afraid to run. But when you get to the NFL level, these are grown men you're going against. And that, like you said, doesn't always translate over. Like, you got to be able to throw the ball. And he had over a dozen overthrows in that game, which to me was just like, when it comes to the point where you got to read a defense and you got to make a pinpoint throw, Joe Burrow was making those plays. Trevor Lawrence was not. So I think Joe Burrow goes to Cincinnati. I mean, they got AJ Green coming off injury. So maybe if they can create something between them, you know, they had one win this year. I think, with Joe Burrow behind center, they get a little bit more than one win. So
if you're AJ Green sitting at home, you know, we talked about this before, you know, AJ Green, who knows what's going to happen with him, but if you're AJ Green sitting home watching Joe Burrow's play and you know what, thinking that the Bengals are going to take Burrow's, would that be enough for you to be like, okay, you know what, I'm going to give this kid a shot and go play for him? Or are you still trying to get on the next plane out of there to a potential contender at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of it depends on, you know, what the culture is like in Cincinnati, which we don't really have.
Yeah, we're not in the locker room, so we don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't have Marvin Lewis anymore. So it's kind of like, you know, you're still trying to figure out, like, what is this Cincinnati Bengals team? But Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, to put myself in his shoes, I think maybe I'm looking at him like, yeah, I would like to see, you know, I'm running my route. I'd like to see this guy make some plays. I don't think you're thinking Andy Dalton's going to escape the pocket and make a play on any given play, you know, and I think Joe Burrow has that. Maybe I'm being early. You know, I'm not a scout, so I don't want to be too confident with it. But I'm if I'm AJ Green, I'm like, yeah, I think I would give this guy a shot. Throw me the pill.
Well, and that's one thing. Actually, you talk about, you know, Dalton not escaping the pocket, but I think so many times we have seen Burrow escape the pocket, like under heavy pressure, somehow gets it out and just chucks the ball, like, you know, last night we saw. And I think he's made a living the past 4 or 5 games at one big play like that. So maybe he's not the scrambling quarterback, but he does, I think, have that escapability, that excitement that you want to build your team around. Because, you know, you look at Justin Herbert last year, who could have came out, could have probably been the number one overall pick. He went back to school. He's still going to get drafted highly, but I feel like after Burrows, there's a huge drop-off at quarterback. There's still a lot of talent, but translating from Burrows to even the next pick, if it's Herbert, I'm not even saying him, but from what the number one pick could have been last year with Herbert to this year with Burrows, Herbert made a huge deciding factor that's going to cost him millions. Burrows cashing in, obviously, in a situation where, you know, going into it, who would have even known that he would have been the number one overall pick? But it just goes to show why college sports are so great, college football is so great. There's so many variables. Many times we can sit here and talk about, you know, this guy's going to translate, this guy's not going to. You and I, we don't claim to be scouts. There's so many times that in the NBA, I know this is kind of off script, but so many times in the NBA, I look at a player and like, that guy's too small. I remember when Chris Paul came out from Wake, I was like, this dude's not going to translate to anything. And all of a sudden he comes out and, you know, he quite frankly could have been one of the best point guards. You know, he's regressed, he's been moved. Who knows what happens? That's another conversation. But to judge a talent like this, I think this is probably the one quarterback, and I think you quickly showed that in a week's time that you can look at and say, okay, man, this dude's for real. He should be a number one overall pick and can really change your organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the drop-off is a good point, bro. I mean, obviously the two was in the conversation, but with his injury, you know, we're not really sure how well that's – I mean, he could go early. He could drop mid-first round. Who knows? But I think you're right. I think this is – with this quarterback class, it's Joe Burrow against everyone else, I think.
And yeah, I don't even think it's – I mean, it is that, but, for a dude like him, not arrogant, not flashy, he's going to come in. He's going to be the number one pick. I totally forgot about Tua. That goes to show you how quickly the season just got away from everybody once Alabama was eliminated, you know, like – Tua, you don't discount what he's done for a team. You know, everyone was wondering if he'd come back. You know, he could have potentially left millions on the table by coming out to the NFL and possibly having one more great year in college or vice versa. You know, you never know. That's a gamble. These guys want to take care of their families and you know, get in the league, which I understand. It's a crazy world right now. And I saw, you know, earlier talking about injuries and stuff like that. I just saw Luke Kuechly from Carolina. He just retired tonight. You know, wow. So there's so many things going on, so many different things. And, you know, he's battled injuries. So it goes to show, like, these guys, you know, maybe 10 years ago were thinking, you know, I want to play college ball, get a national championship. Now it's, hey, man, in college, you know, if I get hurt, I'm not guaranteed anything. We talked about we've seen this go back to the Northwestern days when – what was that all about when they had the class action lawsuit or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a quarterback that essentially – you know, and it's sad but true. You know, these guys are not guaranteed anything. There's no medical care. And I know I'm going on a tangent, going off script. That's what I like to do here. But you know – Burrows is a safe pick, but then you got Tua, Herbert, all these other guys that, yeah, you know, throw their name in the hat. Granted, they're going to be NFL caliber players, so you might as well get over there. Don't risk the injury in college. As sad as that is to say, but looking forward to the draft. That's probably the only time that Lions fans have to cheer before the draft, but we still managed to screw that up. Again, I think we've made a a living on just a What's Up Belly Up, finishing with some kind of Lions talk, whether it be a Super Bowl preview, a playoff preview. It feels like we talk about the Lions more than we really should, obviously, because they've never even sniffed these tangibles. So, but you know, in general, I think we hit our topics. We stayed pretty well in the playoffs. You got anything, you know, specific you want to add? I know there's been a lot going on in baseball. Hinch was fired. I saw Cora was just fired from the Red Sox, which is huge. You know, a lot going on. The NHL, I know Sid's coming back. I know your co-host is probably pumped for that. Me, I just can't get behind it. But, you know, what else is going on in the sports world that you'd like to comment on?
Yeah, one last quick thing about the college football. The reason I wore my Clemson hat to this show today is because I'm not worried. I was upset about the loss, but they'll be back next year. Their recruiting class is incredible, so I'm gonna keep rooting for them. But yeah, I mean, you talked about hockey. Sid's going back, of course. I can't get KJ to shut up about that. But I don't know if you heard about the Zach Kassian for the Oilers. You know, he's giving those punches to Matthew Tkachuk of the Flames. Which is just a fit of rage, it seemed like, and he got a 2-game suspension. So I'm gonna have a chat on Puck Pass with KJ tomorrow about that, because I'm sure he's got an issue with the 2-game suspension. I thought Tkachuk got what he was asking for. That's not to say that Kassian was in the right for doing what he was doing, but I think Tkachuk got what was coming to him. Other than that, I mean, yeah, I saw the baseball stuff. I saw Cora was gone from the Red Sox. It's so hard to judge stuff like that too. And I'm curious to hear what your take is, especially with, like, I mean, it includes the Astros, the Red Sox, even the Yankees, who I know have been in the discussion. And I don't know if we've heard anything about their staff, but with an issue like this, I mean, I don't think that it, even with them cleaning house, does it derail these franchises? I mean, I feel like that they're always doing something to get an edge.
I feel like this is what happened in Houston. Everything came to light. There's pretty much – I thought it was pretty much swept under the rug. There was nothing going to be. Then all of a sudden the MLB comes out and makes a ruling that A.J. Hinch is suspended for a season, all this stuff. And so then all of a sudden you're the front office as GM, and you're like, okay, now we don't have our manager for an entire season. Well, what's the what's the point in paying this guy? Whether we had anything to do with it, whether the front office said – okay, AJ Hinch, this is what we're going to do. So the front office essentially just turned their back on Hinch to make them look like, oh, we're going to be the bigger people. Yeah. And we don't know, again, we don't know behind the scenes, but that GM just comes out, he just comes out and looks like, hey, he's the hero. We got rid of Hinch. You know, we're not going to deal with this. And also, oh, we're going to be able to hire a manager that's going to be able to coach all season now, which granted they lost their draft picks. And then the MLB came out and said, you know, this is what, you know, Houston did, Boston, obviously, and expect the same thing for Boston. So I think the biggest thing we're really going to learn a lot about right now is Houston handled it the only way they could. The GM looks like, you know, the man, you know, got rid of this guy. You know, obviously Houston doing the same thing. So both these guys both these teams are going to bring new guys in. There's going to be some. Cora, Hinch, they're not going to be off the market forever. You know, it's going to be one of those things. It's just, I feel like they were pretty much strong-armed into this. But really, I wonder if Hinch will come out and say anything. I don't think he will. If Cora will come out and say anything, you know, there's that unwritten rule to any kind of employer, stuff like that, you know, whether they were forced to do it or not. But then on the flip side, at this point, is stealing signs cheating? That's a whole nother episode. That's a whole nother thing. You know, if you're doing this stuff, granted, with technology and stuff like that, I get it. But we can even talk about the Patriots, you know, they're videotaping things. If you're not doing something to better improve your team, to take the next step. I know, again, I talk about technology, cameras and stuff like that, but I mean, it goes back to just players being on base, a second base stealing a catcher's signs and stuff like that. It happens all the time. They took it this far. I get it. But if you're not trying to take that next step, I'm not trying to discount anything, take credit from any sport, but if you're not thinking that way, I mean, this goes back to a totally different topic to the Moneyball with Billy Bean in the Oakland, you know, granted they're not doing these kind of things, but they're doing different technologies, different things, data, stuff like that. you know, what are all these things for if you're not going to use them? I know MLB's old school. They want to, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting to see what I haven't even honestly seen what Boston's response was, other than obviously letting Cora go. But yeah. I think we can talk about this till we're blue in the face on another episode. But in general, I'm not trying to take anything away from baseball, discredit the sport. But if you're not doing something to better yourself and your team, then, you know, what's the point? Because at some rate in time, I mean, Houston, even if they weren't stealing signs, they're one of the best baseball teams that we've seen, you know, and actually talking about the best baseball teams, I totally even forgot, you know, I know I'm going to get heat for this, but we're switching scripts real quick. Is LSU, I know we're going back to college, is LSU one of the best football teams you've ever seen? This year's LSU.
I thought about it, and it's best that I've seen in a while. And the reason I brought that up is because I mentioned earlier, I'm not worried about Clemson. They'll be back. And I don't know that LSU will necessarily win out in the SEC again. Granted, they're in a tough conference.
That's how important Burroughs was to that team.
Yeah, and that it's a testament to, yeah, how good Broadway Joe was. But that's the thing is, I think it was – I mean, they broke – Joe Burrow by himself broke records left and right. And just the way that they went about this season, because and especially with the way people were talking about Alabama last season, they were just blowing people out, and then they play Clemson in the championship and they lose. But this time around, LSU has no problem. I mean, they go down 10 points in the championship, but they're able to, you know, come back no problem on the shoulders of Joe Burrow. And it just seems like you could have put this LSU team up against any team in the past decade, I would dare say, and they would probably win a national championship. Like, that's how good they were.
And the crazy thing is this team came out for the first 2-3 drives, and they were flat. Defense, offense, like you said, the defense left them in a horrible position most of the night. I mean, most of the beginning to the game, and they still come out and just light the world on fire. But again, to jump from baseball to college football again, you know, that's where we're at. We don't make any promises here on What's Up Belly Up. So talk a little hockey quickly, but in general, you know, looking forward to the season. We're what, 4 weeks into 3 weeks into to the first of the year. Or, I mean, to January, you know, and we've already had so much in sports between baseball, college football, the NFL playoffs. I feel like this year is already setting the stage to be big things, you know. Really looking forward to the season, to belly up, to puck pass everything. So with that being said, like I said, unless you got anything else to add, I am good to go on behalf of
real quick, let's make a quick prediction before we go into this weekend. Who do you think is going to make Super Bowl?
I'm gonna have to go with San Francisco, Kansas City. So badly I want San Francisco, Tennessee. But I originally had Kansas City as my AFC pick. Either way, I think both teams is great. As I think the best matchup is going to be Kansas City versus San Francisco, that offense versus that defense. But I feel like Kansas City has more playmakers and they win that game. But to discount Tennessee Titans, keep them out. I know Zach is definitely got to be on that Tennessee bandwagon to get Vrabel as first, and then a couple on the here on the way out. So.
Oh, yeah, that would help my hot take for sure. But I'm with you. I think it's Niners Chiefs. As much as I'd like to see Niners Titans, I don't think the Chiefs will make the same mistake that the Ravens did. I'm actually slightly worried that we're going to get Chiefs Packers if the refs help the Packers out a little more. I'm just kidding. But we get that State Farm Super Bowl.
God, yes. Could you imagine? My God. Everyone's insurance is going to go up. But, all right.
Anyway, yeah, you can do your outro.
From here. Yes, we'll get it at this point. You can cut me off at any point. But again, on behalf of myself, Zach Mack, the Puck Pass cronies over here, we got to get KJ on here. I know what that'll turn into a debacle. But again, another night has come, another night is gone. We've got great things in sports right now rolling. We're lucky to be a part of that. So on behalf of myself and Zach, appreciate you guys tuning in. Have a good night.
Tighten up.